It is great to be back with you all. I had a lovely vacation, but it's always nice to come home. So I want to tell you a little story. It's from my trip. So on the north shore of Maui sits Kuau Bay Beach Park. It's one of the few places where you can regularly see green sea turtles just lounging on the beach. And before this trip to Hawaii, I'd never seen a sea turtle, let alone one in the wild, which I was very excited about because I do have a very fond place in my heart for turtles. So we went to this beach, and it's you pull up, and it's a small, unpaved parking lot, and you take a few steps, kind of go over a little dune, and you find yourself on this beautiful sandy beach. And then these clear blue waters behind you. It's breathtaking. And if you look to the left, the beach extends down, and it's more or less empty. And then right kind of in front of where the parking lot was, you see people just enjoying their leisurely Sunday. They're fishing, they're swimming, they're drinking. And then to the right, there's a small part of the beach that's surrounded by some rocks. And there, sure enough, was a very large, very sleepy sea turtle, just sunning itself. It was incredible. Now, it's the law that you must stay at least 10 feet away from sea turtles. And just in case some nosy tourists didn't understand that, there were plenty of handwritten signs there to let you know. So we kept our distance and appreciated these beautiful creatures from afar. But one thing bothered me about that place, because it was this beautiful, spectacular scene, but there was also in it the unmistakable signs of humanity's presence. You see, there was a towel that had just gotten kind of wadded up right next to the turtle, and a sandal that was thrown next to that, and just a few feet away, there was an empty iced tea bottle just strewn on the beach. So we kept 10 feet away, but these items didn't. And now, I don't know if the people left these things here, the things there that were just so used to seeing sea turtles that it didn't faze them anymore to just huck some of their stuff onto the beach. Or if, as it is in so many naturally beautiful places, that humans just thought they had their right to be there and to do as they please. Or could it just been sheer indifference? But whatever the case, that beach felt like a sacred place. It was a sacred place where this endangered species could have a respite. And yet it contained another sign of humanity's ego-driven irreverence. Now, during my time away, you've been hearing, and I've been reading, the Old Testament lessons from Job. And I really can't tell you why, but I enjoy this book. And perhaps it's my imagination that conjures this image of a backroom wager between God and the Satan. Or maybe it's just Job's overly self-important and overly self-righteous friends. They're really know-it-alls. Or maybe it's just the sheer honesty with which Job complains to God. It's not fair that all of these things are happening to him. But the whole book is good. It's filled with all of these nuanced human emotions. And so where we are today, after we hear Job railing against God, God finally speaks. And if I may say so, God does so in a very impressive way, out of a whirlwind. Catch your attention. But every time I read this, it doesn't go as I'm expecting it to. I expect God to apologize to Job for using him as a pawn or for all the horrible things that Job has had to endure. I expect God to be just, to know the difference between right and wrong. And surely Job's treatment has been wrong and even downright mean. God owes him at least an apology, in my humble opinion. That's not what happens. Instead, from this massive whirlwind, God knocks Job down another peg. To Job's previous questioning about why all of the bad things have been happening to him, God rebukes him, telling him that his words lack knowledge and understanding. God then goes on to ask, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy?" Now, in my mind, it all comes with this hefty helping of condescension on the part of God, because Job doesn't know any of those things. "Can you lift up your voice to the clouds so that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings? Can you put wisdom in the inward parts?" Of course Job can't. He's not God. And it is God that not him that creates the rain and feeds the lions and the ravens and sustains all things. To put it pretty succinctly, God is basically telling Job, "Get off your high horse, Job. I'm God, you're not. I can do things and know things that you don't. I'm the creator. You're the creature." Now, I will admit that for most of my life, I have thought God's reaction was just adding insult to injury here. Honestly, that God was kind of out of line and Job was in the right. But the sea turtle reminded me that it's not quite that simple. Most of the readings of the book of Job focus on, well, Job. And of course they do. He's the main character. And Job also thinks the story is all about him. So much so that in the beginning of the book, his family is killed off, but at the end, they get replaced, and Job thinks that, this is a pretty good deal. However, if we only look at the story this way, we don't take into account God's perspective. It assumes that humanity, us, that we are the priority of God, that humans are the center of God's world. Or, if it's like the turtle, maybe the beach should pray primarily for humans, and they should get to put things wherever they want. Now, the biblical scholar J.B. Wells has said that when we realize that humans might not be the ultimate priority to God, the scenario challenges all human egotism. Our habit of replacing the confession that our chief end is to glorify God with the assumption that God's chief end is to be concerned with mortals. Now, sea turtles have been on this planet for around 110 million years. Humans, minuscule 6 million. Why would we think that anything is primarily ours? That we are the most important? Along the same line, does it really make sense that God would love humans more than anything else that God created? Neil deGrasse Tyson is a prominent astrophysicist. And he believes that if we were to zoom out If we were to look at the earth as the small blue dot that it is, a lot of things would come into better focus. Especially in this country, at this time, before a fraught election, he asserts that so many of the things that we believe separate us, we created. And at the end of the day, he thinks these are all ridiculous. In the last year or so, he tweeted, "Visiting space aliens, upon seeing humans oppress and kill one another over who they worship, who they sleep with, what side of an arbitrary line they're born on, or how absorptive their skin is to sunlight, well, those aliens would surely race right home and report no intelligent signs of life on Earth." It's almost as good as God's retort to Job. God loves us all. And at the same time, it's not all about us. God loves the sea turtles too. We don't know everything. We're the creation. And maybe all of creation is equal in God's eyes. God is our incomprehensible creator after all.